is your ship and you are the captain. Oh, captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think.
Chapter 7, Sister of Mine. Life settles into a new pattern, a new normal, a new day in, day out. Zhang Qinghua does his work on Anding Peak for Tang Chong Mountain Sect. He does his spy work for Mo Beijun, and he goes to dote on his fake sister-in-law and nephew regularly, barring missions or sect emergencies. He assigns a new general manager to Qingqing Peak, sets up a visit from a specialty arborist for Xian Shu Peak's landscaping, and manages to hand Shen Qingqiu's talismans over to Kuxing Peak without bloodshed. He also manages to bargain for the demonic artifact that Mo Beijun wanted from another sect, instead of outright stealing it. He even passes off some plot device berries as exotic fruit to Luo Jiahui for her cooking and helps her install new shelves in her kitchen. He keeps on telling his shitty, no-good system to fuck off with its updates. Upgrade never, thank you. Goodbye. There are lots of little accomplishments. They build up. It's pretty nice. He takes further notice of a few more disciples as time goes on, though he's not really sure that he'd call that one of his accomplishments. No offense to these children, but it's one of his unofficial personal rules not to get to know the disciples or even any of the cultivators too well. Pretty much all of these people are inherited from his ascended master anyway. He didn't choose them. Unfortunately, contrary to Zhang Qinghua's plans, disciple spots, also occasionally known as disciple chameleon goat sheep, gets it into his head to come to Zhang Qinghua, of all people, to stop a case of bullying. The boy's begging puts Zhang Qinghua in a really awkward position, which makes it impossible to brush the teary-eyed kid off, emotionally and ethically. And also because the kid has gotten better at physically clinging to a person's feet. Ah, now this is some proper groveling. This disciple has really been training hard. Apparently, it's one of the teachers doing the bullying, so there really aren't that many options for help besides the master of the peak. Zhang Qinghua is really very tempted to remind the kid that life isn't fair. He put up with bullying and discipline as a disciple too, and he survived it. He's got to get to another dinner with his fake sister-in-law. But then Zhang Qinghua finds himself thinking, Jiahui would be so disappointed to find out that this is what kind of scummy person I really am. And then he's disciplining one of his hallmasters for their scum-villain behavior before he really knows it, thinking, here I am now, pretending to be a kind master to keep everyone fooled. What a hypocrite I am. Luo Jiahui is, of course, immediately forgiving of Zhang Qinghua being late. It's okay if it's for a good cause, but don't let it happen again, she teases. Somehow, this good deed leads to more. It leads to him picking up disciple sticky fingers after disciple dumpling thief and disciple dumpling thief's friend come crying to him about their things being stolen. Don't these children know how to set a basic trap? And to him picking up disciple rabbit teeth found sobbing on his doorstep because they need a plot device miracle cure for their ill father and Qian Qiao Peak doesn't have it. Zhang Qinghua, transmigrated author god, knew exactly where to find it. And to him picking up disciple sleepy eyes and disciple nosy, who are apparently soulmates and passionately in love, and also 6 fucking teen years old, and get the absolutely nuts idea that he can do something to get them out of their respective arranged marriages. He can, probably. It's just a super big hassle to involve himself. Politics suck. Is he wearing a sign? He thinks he must be wearing a sign on his back that says, "I don't have enough to do. Please give me all of your problems too." Sure, he's repaid in juicy gossip and everlasting gratefulness, and these young troubles are sometimes more cute than annoying. But still, how does he undo being nice to these brats? It really is true what they say. No good deed goes unpunished. His Onding Peak contemporaries and senior cultivators' problems don't increase, at least. Their troubles are way less cute, anyway. In fact, Zhang Qinghua could almost say that the older cultivators are easier to deal with than before, for reasons that he can't quite pin down. Maybe it's easier to let their insubordinate bullshit flow past him, running smoothly like water, as lightly as the wind, knowing that he gets to skip down the mountain and eat good food in a cozy home later. Zhang Qinghua is barely getting anything from the Onding Peak cultivator currently ranting in front of his desk about, not interrupting local protection rackets? Monopolies being cornerstones of local economies or something? Maybe it's also that he's developing a little voice in the back of his head, which sounds a lot like Luo Jiahui when she's listening to him complain about work, which pipes up to say things like, "Oh dear, he shouldn't treat you like that." Which makes Zhang Qinghua think, "Well, this guy did join Onding Peak a couple of years before I did. He was an inner disciple from the get-go, too." And the little voice says, "But you're the Peak Lord now, not him." Which makes Zhang Qinghua think, "Oh yeah, I am the Peak Lord, not this guy." And the little voice says, "He shouldn't try to tell you what to do." Which makes Zhang Qinghua righteously think, "No, he really shouldn't." And the little voice asks, "So what are you going to do about it?" Which makes Zhang Qinghua determinedly think, "I'm going to tell him to fuck off directly, instead of hedging around this arrogant request until he leaves, and then ghosting him until he frustratedly gives up on ever having it fulfilled. Thank you, abstract voice of my fake sister-in-law and my leveled-up spine." It doesn't work on the likes of Yue Qingyuan and Shen Qingqiu, obviously. But still, progress. If Zhang Qinghua keeps grinding, maybe he'll level up his spine again. With a shitty, no-good system like his, he has to make up his own perks. So the new day in and day out goes on with remarkably few hiccups. A honeymoon phase, maybe? Zhang Qinghua keeps making sure that no one follows him down to Sanjiao Town and decontaminates himself almost religiously. Luo Jiahui's 20th birthday comes around almost before he knows it. Seriously, almost before anyone lets him know. Luo Jiahui does not tell him that her birthday is coming up until she is forced to shyly admit that one of her friends, the tea shop auntie, has invited her over to celebrate. "Brother-in-law brings me so many presents already. I feel like he ought not to get me anything on my birthday," Luo Jiahui jokes. "Maybe I should do as some other people do and get him a present on my birthday. Really, my brother-in-law's company at the little celebration would be more than enough. It's not one of the usual visiting days, but..." No, I'll be happy to come. I'll be there," Zhang Qinghua promises. Inwardly, he's kind of panicking because he, the author god of this world, can't really remember the importance set on birthdays here. See, airplanes shooting towards the sky used birthdays in lots of different ways for various plots, not all of which were cheap, he'd argue, since he genuinely tried to mix up the details when he was leaning too obviously towards being a formulaic hack. Some of those interpretations of different birthday celebrations, he thinks, were actually pretty creative and fun. It was cultural world building. Sometimes it was about mysterious cursed objects being gifted to Luo Bingha on his birthday by treacherous vassals. Sometimes it was about a wife giving out gifts to other people on her birthday due to her personal culture and the resultant harem drama. Sometimes it was about specific and deadly demonic rites of passage so that the protagonist could prove his physical strength, spiritual power, and formidable intellect. Sometimes it was about weird prophecies or curses predicting that something terrible would happen to a wife on a special birthday. Unless the protagonist could find some benevolent spirit or a specific golden finger to save her. Sometimes it was about ancient betrothals or secret inheritances or elaborate festivals or whatever. Birthdays could be very useful. So, Zhang Qinghua has no idea what he's supposed to do for a birthday here. He also, realizing that Luo Jiahui might ask, can't remember when his own birthday is supposed to be. He knows when Airplane's birthday was, but he doesn't remember when Zhang Qinghua's birthday is. His second family wasn't big on birthday customs. The Marshall family doesn't celebrate them. If his life ever depends on answering what day of the year that this body was born on, he's fucked. Fortunately, it turns out that he overthinks it. Luo Jiahui's birthday is pretty much just a casual dinner with some traditional food, in which most of the invited guests take it as an excuse to spoil Luo Jiahui, who, apparently, has told everyone that she's turning 25. After someone says this number, Zhang Qinghua looks at Luo Jiahui with his eyebrows raised. Luo Jiahui puts her hands together when no one else is looking and mouths, please? A little white lie. Okay. Zhang Qinghua gets to meet Luo Jiahui's friends, of which there are quite a few, because she's such a kind and friendly person. There's several people from local restaurants and market stalls, mostly no-nonsense-looking women, and a couple of gruff older uncles, one of whom is missing a hand, who tells Zhang Qinghua repeatedly that he's lucky to have such a talented cook for a sister-in-law. He doesn't disagree with them, as well as a couple of other new mothers who Luo Jiahui has befriended, and their own babies, one of whom shamelessly asks Zhang Qinghua directly if he's one of those Changchang cultivators. The Lord of Anding Peak says. I wouldn't mind getting to know some of those Changchang cultivators better, the woman says wistfully, bouncing her toddler a little higher on her hip. They're all so pretty. I wouldn't mind having one of them for a second husband. A widow? Zhang Qinghua murmurs, truly taken aback. The woman winks at him and says, not yet. And then she and the other mother burst into cackling laughter, which is truly terrifying. How charmingly shameless. How morbidly humorous. Zhang Qinghua is going to go hide on the other side of the room behind Luo Jiahui now. Luo Jiahui is amused by him using her as a shield. Ah, poor brother-in-law, she says teasingly. Who can face down and see the good in demons, but has to hide behind his sister-in-law from single mothers? This is why sister-in-law didn't ask me to invite Liu Shudi to dinner again, Zhang Qinghua asks, low and knowing. Luo Jiahui immediately turns pink and hushes him. She also, mercifully, makes her friend Yan Tingting's statement a little less terrifying by revealing that Tingting's husband is also a good-for-nothing deadbeat who treated her very badly before skipping town. The other single mother, Tao Anyue, is apparently a widow. It's possibly she's a widow, like Luo Jiahui, but Zhang Qinghua doesn't ask for clarification. He doesn't need to know. Zhang Qinghua decides that he doesn't find it very surprising that Luo Jiahui has made some very unconventional new mother friends. He tells them that his name is Shang Huohua when Ting Ting pushes it, which isn't really a lie. That was Shang Qinghua's name before he became a Peak Lord, so he still responds to it, even if it's been a while since anyone used it. It's the name he gave to Granny Sun and told Luo Jiahui to use in public, even though she never calls him anything but brother-in-law, or sometimes by accident, older brother. Granny Sun is here at the birthday celebration too, of course, bouncing the baby protagonist in her lap. She probably knows that Luo Jiahui isn't 25, but she's not saying anything about it. She's glaring at Tea Shop Auntie today. Because Tea Shop Auntie, their hostess, has brought her sons to the dinner. All of her sons, she loudly lets it be known, are very single and would make very good fathers. Luo Jiahui is friendly to all of them. There are three of them, between the ages of 22 and 17. None of whom, Shang Qinghua is told in a whisper by Luo Jiahui, share the same second parent. Sister-in-law really makes some scandalous friends, huh? But Luo Jiahui ends up sticking pretty close to Shang Qinghua, in a way of someone not looking to be caught alone with anyone, which clearly irks Tea Shop Auntie a little. Romance repellent? That's him. He could sell his services, maybe. The whispered self-depreciative joke makes Luo Jiahui giggle, at least, though she also swats him. Anyone would be very lucky to have brother-in-law, she insists quietly. It's, just easier to get men to go away if another man tells them. And Bingha is the most important person in my life right now. Shang Qinghua chokes on his drink, for he will swear on something he doesn't actually care about, untruthfully, no reason at all. He thinks, men are going to have a very hard time getting near Luo Jiahui after Bingha grows up and blackens. You'll rest in pieces, chumps, but I guess it has to be me for now. Shang Qinghua is not too surprised when, not long after, when it comes time to celebrate Luo Bingha's birthday, Luo Jiahui doesn't invite very many people. She says she'll have a celebration for friends later, but today is for family. Shang Qinghua's protagonist son's second birthday has a total of three guests: Luo Jiahui, Shang Qinghua, and Granny Sun. And Granny Sun, who is over 100 years old, according to Luo Jiahui, though she really doesn't look a day over 70, goes home early to nap. Very relatable. Very understandable. Luo Bingha's birthday is the day that Luo Jiahui found him in the Luochuan River. It's not clear that he fully understands what a birthday is, but he's excited anyway. Shang Qinghua can't believe how much his protagonist's son has grown. Bingha is walking now, getting better at it every day. Luo Jiahui jokes that her baby will be much faster than her any day now. Climbing, jumping, and kicking are not so good yet, but they're coming along nicely. And the last time that Shang Qinghua visited, Granny Sun was playing an arhu for the Luos, and Luo Jiahui was trying to teach her son to dance. Toddler Bingha was much more enthusiastic than talented, unfortunately, but that just made it very, very cute. OP cute! Bingha's vocabulary is improving by leaps and bounds, too. Shang Qinghua is very firmly bobo to Luo Jiahui's mama now. And, wow, he just has to put up with having heart problems forever now, apparently. In other bad news, Bingha has learned that Shang Qinghua's spine can't really stand up to a wide-eyed, please? And his new favorite word is, of course, no! He also likes to play jokes on Shang Tinghua now. His favorite might be saying, "Bye-bye," when Shang Tinghua arrives and greets them, and then immediately bursting into giggles. Shang Tinghua tends to respond by saying, "Ah, it's leaving time already? Goodbye, sister-in-law. Goodbye, nephew. Farewell." And then immediately walking back out of the door. He can't help but enjoy it when Luo Binghe comes toddling out after him shouting and latches onto his leg. And more often than not, Binghe goes to search his pockets while he's at it. "Greedy and impatient and lying nephew," Shang Tinghua will accuse. Luo Jiahui jokingly says that she could do without her baby demonstrating his new throwing abilities, with the tone of a single mother who isn't really joking. She also lets Shang Tinghua discover firsthand Binghe's alternatively cheerful and furious determination to try using utensils at meals. "Wow," Shang Tinghua thinks, appalled, aghast, and generally horrified by the process. What a demonstration of the protagonist's future destructive prowess! But she also gives him a handkerchief to clean up the mess after snickering at him. Luo Binghe is growing up so fast, he'll be conquering the world before they know it. "Binghe, would you like a birthday sweet?" Luo Jiahui calls. "No," Binghe answers from Shang Tinghua's lap, which the protagonist is blithely treating like it's his future golden throne. Binghe looks up at Shang Tinghua and orders, "Again!" Shang Tinghua looks at the handmade picture book he's holding in despair. It's one of the first books that he managed to smuggle out of his office. Well, it felt like he was smuggling it past Ti Ching Ti. His martial sister has way too many opinions about Shang Tinghua's attempts at creating a rhyming book for a toddler. "Toddlers won't know good literature from bad literature," he tried to insist, "or good rhymes from bad rhymes." But Ti Ching Ti just insisted that it was super important that someone's first introduction to literature be of objective quality. He also tried to insist that he didn't actually ask for an editor, but Ti Ching Ti glared at him, so his Declaration of Independence came out as beep. Anyway, this book is one of Binghe's favorites, and they have read it 5 times today. They have read it many, many more times than that in total. "Binghe, please, your Uncle Shang can repeat this book about the hunt for the white moon tiger stag from memory alone now. It's engraved on the inside of my skull now. Your Uncle Shang probably mumbles this book in his sleep. Please, 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 can we read a different book for once? Even this hack author needs to mix up the formula every now and again." "Uncle Shang just finished reading you this book," Shang Tinghua complains. "Your poor uncle has done so much reading that he's hungry now." Binghe frowns and says, "Please? Ah, too cute." Shang Tinghua summons up his meager strength to resist. "Sorry, but no. If your Uncle Shang doesn't eat something, his voice will stop working." The protagonist is, with great effort, convinced to enjoy his birthday sweets. And Shang Tinghua promptly hides all of the picture books while Luo Jiahui cajoles Binghe into helping get the table ready. By the time they all sit down, Luo Binghe has apparently completely forgotten about the books. He happily babbles in vaguely intelligible young toddler speak instead about sweets and the market and cooking. He judges who should get which sweet with all the due diligence of an emperor deciding the fate of a nation. After sweets, Shang Tinghua distracts Binghe with the new doll he bought for him, and they play some completely incoherent version of the brave hero Binghe and new friend story while Luo Jiahui cleans up. Luo Bingha ends up frustratedly taking both dolls and taking over the narrative. So Shang Qinghua just has to sit back and watch him mash them together, throw them around, and occasionally shout random words. Shang Qinghua dares to think that it's going pretty well, until he hears a sniffle. He whips his head around to the kitchen, where Luo Jiahui is sobbing into a handkerchief. Ah, what? Oh, shit. What's happening? Luo Jiahui shakes her head determinedly when Shang Qinghua comes over to ask what's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong, she insists wetly. Everything is so good. Nothing's wrong at all. Sister-in-law is too happy? Shang Qinghua tries. Luo Jiahui blows her snotty nose into the handkerchief, an inelegant honk. Every year is so precious. I'd give up so much for him. It's scary sometimes, you know? I'm his entire world. How can he not be mine? Shang Qinghua delicately leads Luo Jiahui back to the dining table and sits her down, before sitting down at the place beside hers. He can do this. He can offer comfort. He knows what to do now. He follows Luo Jiahui's example and holds one of her hands, which she squeezes gratefully. I'm so glad that I get so many years to watch him grow, Luo Jiahui says through her tears. I'm always going to appreciate having my youth, having so many years ahead to spend with my family. It could have been so bad for us. I'm so... And then she hugs Shang Qinghua. It's kind of wet, and Luo Jiahui is shaking, but Shang Qinghua hugs her back anyway and pats her on the back, probably pretty awkwardly. And then Luo Bingha comes over and crawls into Luo Jiahui's lap, between them, patting his mother and making shushing noises. They stay that way for a while, until Luo Jiahui emerges again, red-eyed and flushed pink with embarrassment, at breaking down again. It's fine, Shang Qinghua assures her quickly. It's fine. Thank you, Luo Jiahui says. But, she smiles like her heart's not really in it. Shang Qinghua doesn't actually like being drunk. Airplane didn't like being drunk either. Tipsy is totally fine, especially in social settings where everyone is laughing and having a good time. Like that dinner at Luo Jiahui's house when Liu Qingge came to visit. When he's with other people, it's not so bad. He laughs more, he touches other people more if he's allowed, and he tends to go on extended rants about the value that snobby critics place on authentic and original stories that no one actually likes enough to pay good money for. People want cheap trash, because alcohol allowed that sort of behavior, even if he didn't drink that much. Or, well, Airplane used to do that. Shang Qinghua doesn't really trust anyone enough on Anding Peak. Sneaks, liars, grubbers, and connivers, the lot of them. Or in Chang Chong Mountain Sect, for that matter, to get drunk around the Marshall family. Drinking alone, to him, usually just feels sad. Drinking alone to get drunk is even sadder. He has other hobbies, and drinking alcohol usually interferes with those hobbies. Like writing, by making him clumsy and incapable of concentrating. He'd rather slam down an energy drink. Holy fucking shit, does he miss energy drinks? Instead, and start hammering at a keyboard to have his good time. But, well, tonight he's got nothing else to do, for once. He has special alcohol from Zui Xian Peak Lord Zhang Qingyuan, part of an unofficial gift basket for discovering that the fault of that explosive accident lay with the Wan Tian Peak disciples, though neither of them can admit it's a gift, lest Wei Qing Wei find out and cry bribery or foul play. Usually, Shang Qinghua would save something like this for a bribe. Yes, he's a regifter. yet another crime to add to the list. But, well, he's kind of curious what it's like to be drunk as an immortal master. And he still can't shake those dubiously true cultural ideas that drinking to forget works and drinking makes you fun. He's been having too many emotions lately. He should be able to drown some of them. Worth a shot. Ha! Worth a shot? Ha ha! This special alcohol tastes like juice. It's also getting him very drunk. Very quickly. This is a kind of might as well thing. It's an impulse that he is totally going to regret later. But, he'll just regret drinking this much later then. Or so he thinks, until he realizes that that humming is not him, and it's quickly followed up by the cool whoosh and crackle of a portal opening in his leisure house. A giant, shadowy silhouette appears. A gust of icy wind blows through the house. Or drinking is something he's going to regret right the fuck now. Holy shit. Fuck. Oh no, oh no, oh no. Mo Beitun steps out into Shang Qinghua's leisure house, looking as breathtakingly kingly and beautifully dangerous as always, as intimidatingly large as ever. The portal closes behind him, and he surveys Shang Qinghua's leisure house like it's a hovel to him. And then his eyes land on Shang Qinghua, who, is basically only wearing the equivalent of a bathrobe right now. Shang Qinghua's hair is still slightly wet from the bath, and loose because he's been too lazy to dry it properly. And, wow, would he love to have actual short hair again? But that is not a fucking option in this world. So it's gone all over the place with waves. He's barefoot right now, and really regretting that too. His toes are getting cold with the arrival of an ice demon. He's also just sort of sprawled on the sofa, where he was steadily drinking his way through this juice that's supposed to make people cool, binging on some leftover snacks from his fake sister-in-law, and wishing that he had a television so he could stream shitty dramas so that he didn't have to hang out with his own brain. Because this is his leisure house, he's allowed to be at leisure. Mo Beijun's eyes actually widen. Yeah, the demon lord has caught Shang Qinghua in some pretty uncomfortable positions before now. But, this is, well, not really this uncomfortably comfortable before. Shang Qinghua should really do something about this. He should really fucking do something about this. Oh, fuck, he's really drunk, though. Shang Qinghua tries to scramble to his feet and say, "My king!" Only what he actually says is, "Oh, fuck, my king!" And when he tries to stand up, he ends up having to cling to the sofa because his vision has gone black and spotty. Cultivators shouldn't have this problem. Going temporarily blind because he stood up too fast after hours of lying down shouldn't be a thing for immortal masters. This is bullshit, bro. When his sight clears, he hastily fixes his loosened robe and straightens. Mo Beijun still hasn't moved. That's something. Ah, my king, I'm a little indisposed at the moment. It's really difficult to find a way to politely and subserviently say, "I'm very drunk. I'm way too drunk for this. Go away." Especially when drunk Shang Qinghua's poor pickled brain is not up to this life or death challenge.
I don't think that I'll be able to serve you well tonight, my king. If I'd known you were coming, I would have...
Shang Qinghua swallows his words as Mo Beijun steps forward, pretty much looming over him.
Ah, oh, this character really is too good at looming. Shang Qinghua is unsteady enough that looking up and reflexively trying to back away threatens to tip him over, until he catches himself. He'd totally bow and scrape right now if he wasn't pretty sure that if he lets himself lie down on the floor, he will probably not be able to get up again. Perhaps if my king could tell me what he wanted, I could, make a note? Shang Qinghua suggests desperately. And I would see to it that his command was fulfilled as soon as possible. As soon as I was... As I am no longer compromised. I know our arrangement puts me at your beck and call, but I can't really go anywhere in this state. It would be dangerous. And I don't think that I could tell a lie to save my life right now. It would be very, very bad. So perhaps... Mo Beijun passes him by without a word. He sits down in the large chair beside the sofa, like it's one of his thrones. Ah, so unfairly majestic. With the expression of a demon lord who is not going anywhere. To be fair, Shang Qinghua does think of that chair as Mo Beijun's chair. He doesn't let anyone else sit in that chair, which is one of the few pieces of furniture in his leisure house which can comfortably accommodate a man of Mo Beijun's size. Because Mo Beijun wrinkles his nose like he can tell if someone else has been sitting in his chair, like they've stinked it up and ruined the cushions. To be fair to Shang Qinghua, this is bad. He is so drunk. He can't do this right now.
Sit, Mo Beijun says.
Shang Qinghua sits again immediately. He very nearly misses the sofa. He waits for Mo Beijun to speak, but the man just stares at him in a scowl that Shang Qinghua thinks might be his judgmental or suspicious scowl. Which is bad. Shang Qinghua's scrutiny is too intense. Mo Beijun's staring tends to set off the panic sirens in his brain when it goes on for too long, and it always does. My king, I'm very drunk, Shang Qinghua says pathetically.
Yes,
Mo Beijun agrees. Ah. Mo Beijun's stare sweeps over the alcohol and the snacks. Shang Qinghua hastily picks up one of the snacks and offers it to the man before he can fully realize what he's doing. Luo Jiahui's food once got Qi Ting Ti to stop bullying him and his writing and go back to her own peak. It makes his bratty disciples snap to attention like dogs after a juicy bone. Shang Qinghua could really do with a miracle right now. Food, my king? Shang Qinghua says like a desperate, panicking fool. Mo Beijun eyes it like Shang Qinghua has offered him a plate of literal shit. It's good, Shang Qinghua says weakly, putting the snack down again. I have more alcohol. It's quite fine. Or maybe I should go get dressed. I can go get dressed. I'm not fit to be seen at the moment. I'll be quick. Shang Qinghua tries to get up again to go put on actual clothes. He's not strong enough to do this in only a bathrobe. Only Mo Beijun raises an arm, a long arm, and pushes him back toward the sofa. It's a pretty soft hit for Mo Beijun, which means that Shang Qinghua, with his brain drenched in alcohol and panic, can reflexively, accidentally brush it off with his own hand. And he does. He automatically snaps, "No hitting!" And then he realizes, belatedly, that he's holding Mo Beijun's wrist. And that he just used his new, scolding misbehaving disciples and misbehaving toddlers named Luo Bingha voice on Mo Beijun. Oh, shit! And then he realizes that Mo Beijun has actually stopped. Mo Beijun doesn't really do facial expressions besides scowling or boredom, but now he looks kind of surprised and confused. Shang Qinghua, drunk as he is, could kind of think that the Demon Lord also doesn't know why he stopped. Zhang Qinghua has never snapped like this, or physically tried to stop him before. Zhang Qinghua lets go of the Demon Lord's cold wrist like it's a hot iron, and immediately starts groveling.
Oh, my king, I didn't mean to do that. Please forgive me for the outburst. That just slipped out. I don't know what came over me. My king can, of course, do whatever he likes. Though this servant would appreciate if... sorry. Please have mercy.
He feels Mo Beijun's hand touch the top of his head, where he's bowed and thinks, oh, fuck, this is it. Only Mo Beijun, slightly more forcefully this time, but still weirdly soft for him, pushes Zhang Qinghua back towards the sofa. Zhang Qinghua lands back on the sofa with a soft thump.
Sit,
Mo Beijun says again.
Thank you. Of course I shouldn't have stood.
This servant would appreciate what?
What?
Mo Beijun is looking at him with narrowed eyes now as he reclines in his chair again.
What, he demands immovably, would this servant appreciate?
Zhang Qinghua is having a lot of difficulty remembering what he said through the fog and the terror of knowing his potential fate. But he realizes, sooner rather than later, unfortunately, he's way too drunk to properly navigate Mo Beijun's lenience right now. He can't manage to put the lie filter back between his foggy brain and his big mouth.
This servant would appreciate no hitting, if possible,
he says, before rushing to explain, as though more words are really going to help his case here with a man who hates talking.
Humans are much more... softer than demons, my king.
Yes,
Mo Beijun agrees, in the way of someone who disdains all humanity.
Of course my king knows this. My king has been very, very lenient already over the differences. But this servant would very much appreciate if this king could be lenienter? More lenient?
Zhang Qinghua suggests, fueled by a fool's liquid courage.
Demon culture has lots of hitting. Lots of it. But this servant really doesn't need that to be loyal. Really, I already know that my king will totally kill me if I'm disloyal. And like, why? When there are truth serums in this world and stuff, right? Besides the fear. But when disloyal people are afraid of something, then they'll say anything you want to hear to make the bad stop, like torture. It just doesn't work.
Torture,
Mo Beijun repeats. But Zhang Qinghua is on a roll of panic and, counterproductively, misses this glaring warning sign.
If all people have is fear making them loyal, then they're not going to care so much, you know? If something else comes along, they might even want to get rid of you to get rid of the threat. But there's always another threat in the demon realm, so...
Is this a threat?
What?
Zhang Qinghua's foggy attention snaps back to the present.
Time to panic better. Panic better.
Mo Beijun looks furious. Really angry. Super angry. The angriest. The temperature in the room is dropping quickly, which is really not good when Zhang Qinghua has wet hair and is dressed only in a bathrobe.
How does he sober up quickly again? Is there even a way to do that with the special Get Immortal Cultivator's shit-faced alcohol? He's gonna die. No, of course not. I would never, ever, never make threats, my king. Absolutely not. I'm very loyal. The loyalist. There's no one loyaler than me,
Zhang Qinghua promises hastily.
I'm just remarking a little on cultural differences. There are lots of cultural differences, is all. Fascinating stuff. I would never try and make any threats against my king. No way, or try to kill him in any plans. I would never do that, ever.
Plans?
Mo Beijun repeats, looking no less furious.
How would someone like you try to kill me?
Oh,
what? I would never do such a thing. Never!
How would you?
I wouldn't!
The cold spreading through the room is getting worse. The only reason, probably, that Mo Beijun is not radiating painful amounts of demonic energy is because they're on Anding Peak and secrecy is tantamount.
Answer the question, Mo Beijun orders.
Shang Qinghua brings his legs up onto the sofa to save his toes.
My king!
How would you kill me?
This is such a bad situation. There's no good way out of this. Probably poison?
Shang Qinghua yelps finally.
I'm no match for a demon of your strength, physically. I would have to physically incapacitate you, or trap you, before I could do anything.
Trickery,
Mo Beijun says grimly.
Like Tian Longjun.
I guess.
How would you accomplish this?
My king is much too wise to be caught by.
How?
My king, please, it's getting very cold in here.
Shang Qinghua cries. For some reason, this actually works. Shang Qinghua's leisure house stops its transformation into a walk-in freezer, though Mo Beijun's expression remains just as frosty and foreboding. The demon lord still looks expectant. Shang Qinghua licks his lips.
The Huanhua Palace sect dart was, very effective. A similar poison could be placed on my furniture if necessary, or in the incense, or in the candles. There are, rare demon-eating plants which can temporarily render even strong demons unconscious with their poisons, which could be placed...
Go on.
My king sometimes allows me access to his clothing, Shang Qinghua squeaks. I could slip in, or stitch a life-draining or paralysis talisman pretty quickly. I could put talismans on my doorways, or under the bed, or on the ceiling, or into the pillow, so that the next time my king thought to displace me, he, would be surprised. The underside of someone's boots can be a good place to stick tracking or trapping talismans, even when they're walking, if you time it just right. And there are magic jars, too, which can trap a person if they touch it, and, cursed blankets which can smother people to death.
Go on.
Is this what morbid curiosity is? Shang Qinghua is sweating. I could, call my martial siblings and set up a trap using spiritual fire or a blood fever curse?
Shang Qinghua suggests, incapable of remembering all the random ideas he's come up with over the years, in hopes of saving himself from his scum character's fitting fate. He's had lots of them. And use a combination of things? But my king, I never would. I could never go through with it. Mo Beijun doesn't look impressed by this declaration.
Maybe I could do it if I really wanted to, but I'm not going to. I didn't do it before,
Shang Qinghua blurts out, because he realizes that's not any better.
Oh, if he somehow manages to live through tonight, then he's never getting drunk again. Not ever. I promise that I don't want to. I wouldn't. I won't.
Mo Beijun regards him silently, still scowling intensely.
I'm really not making any threats, my king.
What do you want out of this arrangement?
Mo Beijun demands. Mo Beijun's eyes narrow warningly.
My king, I really don't understand the question.
Mo Beijun's expression now says, I will kill you if you make me repeat myself.
My life?
Shang Qinghua eventually tries.
Oh no, that just makes Mo Beijun look angrier again.
And nothing else?
Mo Beijun demands.
I value my life quite highly, my king,
Shang Qinghua protests.
It's a very dangerous world out there. Humans are very soft. I know that you could kill me, no trouble, in an instant. My life is a very good reward to me if you let me follow you for the rest of my life.
That still doesn't make Mo Beijun look satisfied. He kind of looks like he's seething, actually.
which should really be Shang Qinghua's sign to shut the fuck up forever. But that warning never seems to stick with him. With his brain soaked in bad juice, all those mental notes are slipping away even faster than before. Nothing is sticking. Words are the only thing he has. I'm really not a very ambitious person, my king. Really not. Peak Lord is more than enough. I don't have any dreams of wanting to rule the world or anything. I wouldn't want to rule it even if someone gave it to me to rule. Fuck no. I'd have to get out that right away. Shang Qinghua insists. All those people to protect and feed and make sure they're behaving themselves? Kinging is really too much work. There's so much more to it than crawling to the top of a hill of dead bodies to crow about how great you are. All those fancy jewels and treasures and palaces in the world wouldn't be worth being the emperor of the world. I'd be so unhappy and scared for my life, too. Everyone trying to kill me or use me all the time. I'd rather just be happy instead. Shang Qinghua doesn't even like knowing his disciples' names when there are so many things out there that are super duper good at killing cultivators. If anything, he thinks his track record as author god is a very persuasive argument for not putting him in charge of the world. He shouldn't even be in charge of ending Peak, really. Damn system, you should have been a bro, he thinks. Shang Qinghua looks anxiously towards the demon lord in his sitting room, who doesn't really look angry anymore, maybe? He's scowling at Shang Qinghua, kind of like he really can't believe Shang Qinghua is allowed to exist, maybe? It's not really easy to tell.
You would rather act through a king as a coward? Mo Beijun demands.
What? Shang Qinghua is too drunk to parse that immediately. Oh, no, no, no one can tell you what to do, my king. Definitely not me. Mo Beijun is the only person who gets to decide what's right for Mo Beijun to do. Everyone else just has to put up with it or he'll kick their ass.
Mo Beijun's scowl deepens again. Even kings cannot do all that they please.
Well, not everything. No one gets to do or have everything they want, Shang Qinghua agrees quickly. But it's fine if it's not really hurting anyone, right? That's where to draw the line. Then you can be like, I don't give a fuck how you think I should live. My king could hang out at human noodle bars if he wanted, and anyone who tried to tell him it was undignified for a demon lord is probably just jealous. Fuck them. Who cares what they think? What have they ever done for their opinion to mean anything? You have dignity to spare, my king. Nothing to prove. You're super cool no matter what anyone says. Be happy. Now Mo Beijun looks confused again. Shang Qinghua says, cursing his stupid fucking mouth for the nth time in the past 10 minutes. He's so dead. Please forgive me for being impertinent. I'll stop talking now. Am I allowed to stop talking now? I'm really not making threats. I swear I wouldn't do that. Why would I? We can just be friendly, can't we? We can just help each other out because the world is shit and reliable help is hard to find. And I just don't want to kill you. Mo Beijun gets to his feet very suddenly. Now Shang Qinghua couldn't talk even if he wanted to. Oh shit! Demon lords who are so tall and muscular shouldn't be allowed to move so fast. It's super unfair and really scary. He's gonna die because he let himself be not sober in his spare time. Don't drink and transmigrate, kids. Except Mo Beijun brushes past Shang Qinghua and leaves through a portal without another word, stalking out as suddenly as he'd arrived, instead of deciding that he's really had enough of this vile betrayer character already. Instead of killing Shang Qinghua, he just leaves. Shang Qinghua blinks at the spot where the blue and black power swirls away into thin air. The demon lord leaves nothing but a faint chill behind in his house. What the fuck? What the fuck?
Seriously, what the fuck? He didn't even say what he wanted, Shang Qinghua realizes, horrified down to his bones. He better not get mad at me when I don't do it then. I'm not a mind reader. Ugh, why did I say all that? Idiot, stupid, dumbass, I'm never drinking again. He's really gonna kill me later now. I should go fake my death right now. Sister-in-law will totally take me in. No questions. I'm running away, for real this time. Somehow, Mo Beijun does not kill Shang Qinghua for his drunken rambling and intoxicated ranting and inebriated murder plans. Shang Qinghua is much too cowardly to ask the Demon Lord why not. He might change his mind. The next time they have a meeting, the worst thing that happens is Mo Beijun glaring at him even more and even more intensely than usual, which is already crazy intense and super scary. The Demon Lord doesn't even say anything about his dropping in on Shang Qinghua's drinking, which is slightly blurry, but really not blurry enough for Shang Qinghua. The meeting happens like they're both trying to leave as soon as possible. Well, if the Demon Lord wants to forget the whole thing ever happened, Shang Qinghua is super fine with that. Totally okay. He would totally erase it from his memory if he could, because it just makes his face burn with humiliation and his heart squeeze with fear if he lets himself think about it for longer than 2 seconds. His relationship with Mo Beijun doesn't seem to have gotten worse, he hopes. He really hasn't been having a good week in general. The Anding Peak disciples and cultivators have been super needy, and no one seemed happy with any of his decisions. Fuck him for trying to mediate. A Qian Chao Peak storeroom burned down because airplane shooting towards the sky, a fool, an idiot, and the stupidest author god to ever live thought it would be cool to have spontaneously combusting plants for some reason. Kuxing Peak Lord Wang Qingjia implemented Shen Qingqiu's talismans incorrectly on Xi Zhao Peak, and Shen Qingqiu had to come over to fix them, and that made no one happy. It's been one bad thing after another for the past month, really. Shang Qinghua is still thinking about Mo Beijun's disastrous surprise visit when he goes to visit the Luo house later that week. He wishes he could stop thinking about it. He hasn't been this terrified that Mo Beijun is going to randomly show up and kill him in his sleep since he was a disciple. At least the Demon Lord still doesn't know about Luo Jiahui and her son. Shang Qinghua has been making sure that he's not followed either way, and that includes by any weird scents. Luo Jiahui has left a note on her front door for him today, which says, "In the garden." He's too distracted to consciously note how much her handwriting has improved since she really started practicing her reading and writing. Shang Qinghua goes around the house towards the shared courtyard, still lost in regrets. Never drinking again. Never ever. Alcohol is definitely evil. Thank you for the lesson, Granny, Luo Jiahui's voice says cheerfully, breaking through his miserable, muttering thoughts. Say goodbye to Granny, Bingha. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Bingha,
Granny Sun's voice answers warmly, before her voice turns, much less warm.
Your brother-in-law is visiting soon.
Yes, we need to get ready to greet him, don't we, Bingha?
That man comes to visit very often,
Granny Sun persists, and Shang Qinghua can hear her frown.
Odd for a brother-in-law to be so close. Shouldn't some important Tang Chong cultivator have better things to do than hang around you?
Maybe, Luo Jiahui says quietly.
What's in it for him, eh?
Well,
Xiang Qinghua has heard it said that eavesdroppers never hear good things about themselves. In his long and shameful history of eavesdropping, this has always been true. Eavesdropping is still very useful, very much worth it. But, hearing what other people really think of him has never been a good experience for him. It's true this time, too. I think he comes by because he's lonely, Luo Jiahui says. Granny Sun says. Luo Jiahui bids her neighbor farewell again, and Xiang Qinghua has to scramble away so he can pretend to be approaching his fake sister-in-law's front door for the first time. It's sort of a reflex not to be caught eavesdropping. Luo Jiahui, approaching her front door, greets him with a wide smile. Look, Binghe, it's your Uncle Xiang. The toddling protagonist, who doesn't know any better, greets Xiang Qinghua enthusiastically. Xiang Qinghua is super used to smiling when he doesn't really feel like smiling, and it's hard not to smile with such an OP baby halo directed his way. He greets his fake nephew with as much enthusiasm as he can muster. Hello, nephew. I think you've grown again. Are you taller than me yet? I have something to show you, Luo Jiahui says brightly, after tea has been served. A new picture book has been presented and read three times, and the protagonist has been put down for his afternoon nap. What is it? Luo Jiahui gets a candle from the cupboard, sets it on the table, and lights it. Then she sits across from him, furrows her brow, and sticks her pointer finger directly into the open flame. What? After about 3 seconds, Luo Jiahui quickly retracts her finger and then shows it off to him, grinning widely. Look, she says brightly, not burned. Oh? Xiang Qinghua says. Oh! I can use spiritual energy now, Luo Jiahui says, brimming with excitement. I've been cultivating my qi with Granny Sun every day, and she says she's never seen someone improve so quickly. I told her it was all thanks to my brother-in-law's gifts, probably. Xiang Qinghua has maybe been overdoing it with the cultivation-boosting plot devices as gifts. Just maybe. Almost definitely. Shit! That's great, Xiang Qinghua says cheerfully. Uncle Han was training to be a cultivator, but then he got married and became a cook instead. He can stick his hand into a pot of boiling oil, no problem. Xiang Qinghua thinks back. Is Uncle Han the one missing a hand? That happened when he was a cultivation disciple, Luo Jiahui protests, flushing slightly pink. He needs to be extra skilled with the hand he has left. Xiang Qinghua is now extra dubious about the people Luo Jiahui hangs out with. Bad influences. But sticking her finger into candle flame without harm is still an accomplishment. So they celebrate. Luo Jiahui talks excitedly about all her new cook friends and their personal cooking tricks, most of which are normal skills anyone can learn, some of which are more fun party tricks than practical. Xiang Qinghua hedges around Luo Jiahui being very cautious with her cultivation, but she promises him that Granny Sun has already made her make lots of promises about responsibility. I didn't think I'd ever be able to do anything, Luo Jiahui admits. I thought that maybe I could use all the teachings and manuals to teach Binghe, but that I was probably too old, and that moral impurities might... She trails off and hastily wipes at her eyes. No more crying, she insists. I've done too much crying already. She doesn't cry again, but Xiang Qinghua pats her hand anyway, feeling like he ought to have done something nasty to her ex-employer after all. The bad things other people do to her don't make sister-in-law a bad person, he promises quickly. It doesn't work like that. Thank
fuck that it doesn't work like that in this world. Airplane shooting towards the sky's inconsistent and unconventional cultivation mechanics and proud immortal demon way are good for some things. It's not your fault. If it's anyone's fault, then it's airplane shooting towards the sky's fault. Soon, sister-in-law will be a great cultivator, and she won't need me for anything, Shang Qinghua jokes. She'll be able to do everything all by herself. Luo Jiahui chuckles a little weakly. The rest of the visit is a little quieter, at least until Luo Binghe wakes up from his nap. Shang Qinghua is roped into playing pretend with the dolls, and another incoherent adventure of brave hero Binghe and friend takes place. Shang Qinghua plays along as best as he can, but the 2-year-old protagonist keeps changing the story on him. It's not easy to keep up. Outside of entertaining his fake nephew, he must be suspiciously quiet. Is something wrong, brother-in-law? Luo Jiahui asks him. No, of course not, Shang Qinghua insists quickly. Just busy, always busy. It's fine. All right, Luo Jiahui says. He keeps hearing her voice saying, I think that he comes by because he's lonely. Of course Luo Jiahui doesn't actually like me, Shang Qinghua thinks after he returns to the mountain. Of course not. She's just being polite to him. He got her out of a very, very bad situation, and he's helping support her still, so she has to be nice to him. He'd have to be out of his mind to think that her invitations to visit are out of anything but obligation, really. She's just good at pretending to try and keep him happy, because she's dependent on him and he bought into his own Uncle Shang lie too much. He'd be tempted to start drinking again if he didn't get rid of all of the alcohol in his leisure house in a fit of embarrassment and fear. But drinking to forget probably wouldn't work. With the luck of a cursed author god clinging to him, Mo Beijun will probably show up again if he starts drinking. When he left his second family's home to go take the test to join Tang Chong Mountain Sect and make something of himself, or rather, of his character, he overheard one of his second parents saying to the other, "Let him try. At least this will lessen our burden." And when Airplane left for college, when he tried to float the idea of staying with either of his divorced parents and their new families to save money, his father had asked him outright, "Don't you want to be more than a parasite in someone else's home? You're a man now." There are some things that a person can't shake, apparently. Life to life. He's a transmigrator anyway. He's always going to be out of place. Shang Qinghua sends his apologies the next time he's meant to visit Luo Jiahui, claiming he's swamped with work. This excuse has the benefit of being true. It's still an excuse, though, because he really needs to start distancing himself. He's probably been a real creep forcing his unwanted company on a young woman like this. That must be why Granny Sun doesn't like him. He sends his apologies again the time after that. And a third time. He can be shameless, true, but he likes to pretend he has some face, and what little face he pretends to have can't go there right now. Luo Jiahui is too friendly for her own good. She's got lots of real friends to keep her company instead. The day after the fourth time in a row that Shang Qinghua hasn't visited Luo Jiahui, Disciple Spots comes into his office to tell him that he has a surprise visitor. Shang Qinghua valiantly resists the urge to cry, "Oh, fuck, what now?" and then dive under his desk for cover from whoever has come to chew him out now and tell his disciple to tell whoever it is that he's dead. The deadest! "It's a woman who's not a cultivator," Disciple Spots reports. "The gate guards let her in because she has papers with your seal. She says she'd like to talk with you, if you're available, and that she'll wait until you are." Shang Qinghua freezes. What the fuck?
Disciple Spots clearly wants to know all about this mysterious woman who's come to visit the Lord of Anding Peak, but Xiang Qinghua just tells him to bring her to his office right away. When Luo Jiahui walks in the door, dressed in her nicest clothes and looking anxiously determined, Xiang Qinghua dismisses his disciple, closes the door, and activates all the privacy talismans he owns. "Sister-in-law, what's wrong?" he asks. It can't be a super big emergency, not if Luo Jiahui said that she's willing to wait for him. Or can it? Xiang Qinghua's office is the best place for privacy on Anding Peak without whisking the both of them off back to Sanjiao Town.
I was hoping brother-in-law could tell me.
Where's Bing He? Xiang Qinghua realizes, panicked. Wait, what?
Bing He is with Granny, Luo Jiahui says, with her chin held high. I asked her to look after him so that I could come talk to my brother-in-law.
In all the time that Xiang Qinghua has known Luo Jiahui, he has never seen her separated from her foundling baby. She's never more than a room away. She can't go for more than 15 minutes without checking on him. She checks on him even when he's napping sometimes, just to make sure that he's still there.
I know that you wanted to keep us separate from the sect, but I wanted to be sure that everything was properly understood.
Ah, Xiang Qinghua says. Okay. A serious talk. This looks like it's going to be a very serious talk. Xiang Qinghua sits her in one of the seats in front of his desk while he sits behind the desk, desperately trying to figure out what's gone wrong. People come to Anding Peak with problems for him to solve. Did Luo Jiahui get robbed? Does she need him to send her more money? More cultivation manuals? He can fix those.
What brings sister-in-law all the way up the mountain? Brother-in-law stopped coming to visit.
Ah, Xiang Qinghua says, for lack of anything else to say. Fuck.
I should have asked you what was wrong again, Luo Jiahui says, like this is somehow her fault. I thought that it was an important cultivator problem bothering you, but your messages were just too vague. They sounded wrong. So I started to think that maybe it was something I did to offend you.
No, it was nothing you did. I'm just very busy.
Maybe brother-in-law didn't like someone like me cultivating, but he brought me all those gifts. Maybe brother-in-law was annoyed by something Bing He did, but he's always said so directly when Bing He misbehaved before. So I asked Granny's son what she thought, and she said that she thought she heard my brother-in-law sneaking around when we were talking in her garden that day.
Fuck.
So I tried to remember what I said that might have offended you. And I remembered saying that I thought my brother-in-law came to visit so often because he was lonely. Xiang Qinghua doesn't flinch, but, it still hurts to hear that again. Because, it's true. And I thought, maybe brother-in-law thought I meant that as a bad thing. Luo Jiahui persists, with a little wetness around her eyes again, watching him very intensely. Is that what happened? Xiang Qinghua thinks desperately of how to explain that she doesn't have to put up with him if she doesn't want him in her house. He doesn't have any way to say that doesn't sound super sad and super duper pathetic. If he had a decent system right now, then he'd probably prod it for help right now. But his system would probably just give him the worst advice out of spite. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
I don't think it's such a bad thing to be lonely, is it? Luo Jiahui says.
I'm lonely.
What?
I miss my family, even though they threw me out. I miss my old friends, even though they didn't help me. I miss my hometown and the restaurant where I grew up, Luo Jiahui admits. I like some of the people here, but I don't know them very well yet, and I don't know if they'll still like me if they know everything about me. I don't
think I ever want to tell them.
That's fine, Zhang Qinghua says, stunned. I don't know if I'm raising my baby correctly, and I don't know who to ask for help sometimes. Because Granny doesn't have children, and I always feel like the aunties are judging me. Sometimes Binghe is the only person I get to speak to for days, Luo Jiahui continues. I'm lonely sometimes, even when I go to the tea shop or the town gardens with my friends, and I'm surrounded by people. I can be lonely. Sometimes that's when I feel the loneliest of all.
Oh, he knows how that feels. So I thought that maybe my new brother might be lonely too,
Luo Jiahui says, her hands folded tightly in her lap, looking at him through her eyelashes.
He's very busy, you know, my brother-in-law. He does a very important job that's a little thankless, and sometimes it seems like people only notice what he does when he's doing it wrong. This job puts him high above most of the people in his life, and his Marshall siblings are all very busy people, too. He's not married. I've never heard him talk about friends or family, only about disciples and assistants and subordinates and business partners.
Well, yeah, but that's the way that Zhang Qinghua's life has always been. Not always the same way exactly, but isolated, disconnected, and orphaned pretty much covers it. That's what Airplane's life was like, too. Kind of. A man sort of just gets used to it. Despite my brother-in-law's busy job, he comes down the mountain every week to visit us. If he can, he brings us gifts. Too many gifts. And he makes sure that we're well, Luo Jiahui says, with a determination in her eyes worthy of a protagonist. He dotes on my son, gives me anything I asked for, but most importantly, without my asking, he gave me a home and has never judged me harshly for my past mistakes. I would never. He tells me about his duties and the many wonders he's seen, and he makes me feel worldly and knowledgeable and interesting. He makes up the sweetest and funniest stories in what little free time he has and lets me see how he makes them. He pretends not to know that I can't read very well. He relentlessly compliments my meager cultivation, despite being an immortal master, and he acts as though he would accept an invitation to my dinner table over that of an emperor. And when he visits my little family, when he calls me sister-in-law and acts as though he means it, I don't feel so lonely.
Luo Jiahui takes a deep breath. So if he's willing, and if he can find the time, I would very much appreciate it if my brother-in-law visited me again. If I have done something wrong, I would like the opportunity to make amends, because I miss him, and my son misses him as well. And my little family is not the same without him.
Zhang Qinghua can't speak. This doesn't normally happen to him. He's always got something to say. Something stupid and annoying and unwanted, probably, but something. The words won't stay in, usually. But now he doesn't have any words.
Will he come home, please?
Luo Jiahui asks. She leans forward, reaching across his desk and touches his face.
Ah, fuck. He's crying again. Please, someone put him out of his misery here.
Zhang Qinghua nods. He manages that much, at least.
I don't think it's a bad thing to be lonely,
Luo Jiahui says, some tears falling free down her face, too.
I don't think it's a bad thing to want to not be lonely. It hurts to be cast aside by people who don't want your company. But the only way to not be lonely is to keep looking for the right people. I think I've found one of my right people, so I'm not going to give up on trying to keep him company.
It's a long time before Zhang Qinghua can manage to choke out,
thank you. Huage is very welcome,
Luo Jiahui says determinedly.
and blows her nose into a handkerchief again. There are worse things in the world than having to put up with being loved undeservedly.